The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
You know, really, George sort of said it perfectly. You're constantly battling against yourself. And you know, it's that feeling of imposter syndrome. I would expect that most business owners who are running early businesses, whether they're entrepreneurs or physical, you know, brick and mortar or whatever, they feel like, am I doing the right thing? Right. And you're constantly looking for that validation. And I think that my biggest bit of advice that I tell everyone I talk to about building a business is have a partner, have someone who will give you, you know, feedback, both positive and critical on your ideas, but will also be there for you if you need a little bit of support. Like if you're especially feeling bad because something isn't working, it was a big bet, you know, talking to your co-founder is a huge benefit.
Right.
But I would caveat that partners should be equal and opposite to you. George and I are very opposite personalities. If we were both me, then we would achieve nothing. So right. You know, we have heated discussions a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very productive because number one, we know how to stop them if they get personal. And number two, you need counterpoints. You need someone who's going to say, Nick, that's a terrible idea for these five reasons. And then you move on, you create something from that.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
My name is George Mazzella. I'm CEO and co-founder of The Suite, a career management platform and network for executives. Prior to founding The Suite, I spent several years in the executive recruiting space where I advised VC-backed businesses on talent.
My name is Nick Cook. I'm co-founder and CRO of The Suite, a career management platform built for executives. My background is working in online monetization of consumer platforms, whether it's travel, music, or education, with specialty focus in marketing, data, analytics, and subscriptions.
All right, Nick, George, welcome to The Accidental Entrepreneur. I think it was Sandy, right, that connected us?
Sandy Trepnick.
She's a connector. She's connected me with a ton of people. I feel like I can't keep up with her. I feel bad. I got to connect her with more people. I don't have time.
She just connects everybody. I mean, she's one of those people, man. She says she's going to do something. She does it, which is fantastic. And my inbox is littered with connections that she's made. Yes. So I'm very appreciative of how active she's been in our community.
Yeah, she delivers. There's no question about it. I think I had five people on my podcast last week. Turns out they all came through her.
You know, so I can't keep track of them. You're going to start paying her royalties, Mitch.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the sad part. I could pay her royalties, but any percentage is zero. still zero. So, you know, that's the way it's going to work. So, all right, guys. So I appreciate you coming on, and I've looked at your platform. It's interesting, and the community that you're building. Maybe George, you want to start and talk about, well, first talk a little bit about your background and where you came from and how you kind of got together. Maybe Nick can go into his background, and then we can talk about the suite and what it is and what you're building there. Does that make sense? Like a roadmap?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start at the beginning, I guess. So I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. Traditionally, my path that I set myself on actually was law enforcement and eventually politics. That was the original path I had planned. And clearly, that isn't where I ended up. but I got hired by the FBI straight out of college, very quickly decided I wanted nothing to do with that life, and fell into the world of executive recruiting. And so I spent several years in the world of executive recruiting, mostly as I said in the intro, working with VC backed businesses, placing executive teams. And, you know, to be honest, Mitch, I couldn't shake this frustration I always had where I felt there was something missing from the marketplace.
What right, industry side, was it, George? Like, what were you recruiting for? These VC companies, were they concentrated in any particular industries or?
Pretty broad. I would say consumer tech is probably the biggest focus, consumer tech, and then B2B SaaS. So that's okay. Software right. Area software as well.
Software as a service.
Yes. the SaaS, PaaS, whatever. There's right. 100 different
I was talking
ones.
To somebody yeah. today who actually used to be in politics too. About the fact that in our industries, we tend to like talk in technical terms and then people yes. don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah.
I do that a lot all the time.
It's because we like to pretend that we're smarter than we are, Mitch.
Right. And we just confuse really other people. Yeah. And we just confuse exactly. other people. Yeah. Like I talk exactly. about corporate exactly. governance and she's like, I don't even know what that is. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, don't even bring up data terminology with me. We have anagrams for everything and it's just,
I know my son's, I told you my son's an informatics major. I'm like hearing, I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah. And I don't want to know. I got enough in my head. So go ahead, George. Sorry.
So I did that for several years. I led two practice areas globally for a boutique firm. And Nick is a personal friend of mine. And I felt like I used to just spend most of our time complaining about the industry and how inefficient the process was and how much was missing. And, you know, I had meeting after meeting with executives basically who would complain about there were no services or that out there that basically could help them on their job search. So when you're an executive, you're conducting a job search, you go to Google, you type in CFO job, New York, you get nothing.
You get recruiting firms. Yeah.
And you're at the mercy of these recruiting firms. And so, you know, I sort of went to Nick with this problem and it was over a Rosh Hashanah dinner and it was this, come to Jesus moment of like, oh
that's
man,
pretty funny. Come to Jesus moment at a Rosh Hashanah. That's pretty funny.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that was totally planned, I swear. and so we had this moment and we were just like, let's build a direct marketplace to connect it to directly. Let's remove the middle person. Basically, let's put George out of a job. And that's basically what we set off to do. And that's what we've been doing. Since April of 2019, we've been building this thing.
So and people so are connecting launched. Direct then. They don't need mm-hmm. a recruiter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so in our platform, we built a way for executives to not only connect with one another, but also directly with companies for opportunities. And so it's this curated and high quality marketplace mm-hmm. to give an alternative to LinkedIn and other social networks that are what we label as mass market solutions.
Yeah, they're really not. Mm-hmm. They're connections. They're not. Find a job on LinkedIn, but you really have to network and, you know, connect you on your own. You ever see that? You get your little logo open to a job or open to a position, whatever it says. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. Nick loves those.
I think I have one on my photo. I think this is open to some, I'm always looking for companies that could drive value.
Of course.
I've had discussions with companies about taking them over and stuff. We're in discussions now actually. And I don't even know how the hell that got on my picture. I must've clicked on something or agreed to something. And
they use like one setting that you probably decided on years ago and they use that. And to be honest, we're very thankful because it's been amazing for our user acquisition to just target people who are looking for work. So, you know, for LinkedIn, they've basically advertised to us who we want to invite to the network. So we're thankful for it.
So you're connecting with employers and big corporations, C-suite level, and you're connecting with the executives on the other side who may not even be looking for right now, right? You want them in when they think of it. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, what's the number, Nick? It's 40, 50% of our members aren't even looking for a job right now.
That's it. Yep. Around about there.
Right. But there are resources you guys are building that are valuable to them, right? So
exactly.
Okay. Well, yeah. Nick, let me hear about your background, because I know you come from more of the IT data tech side.
Sadly, I wasn't recruited by the FBI when I left school.
Right, but, exactly. Me too.
I was born in the U.S., but then I always say I moved to the U.K., but I didn't really have the choice. I was very young. I was four, and my parents moved to the U.K. So I spent all of my life, most of my life growing up in the U.K.
No accent.
I mean, I could put it on if you want, but that's a little.
I mean, George doesn't sound like he's from Brooklyn, so
exactly. No, we're kind of like you feather out the extremities of the dialect there. But So I grew up and was educated in the UK, went to university in Scotland, but worked at companies that always had a presence in America, and so it was always my goal to move to New York. I always wanted to live in New York. I worked in technology. I was inspired by my brother, worked at Google in the very early days, and I was inspired by him to want to work in the technology space. It's so interesting, so exciting. So I've worked in, worked at Kayak, where I was doing ad sales for, the flight aggregator. But flight aggregation is not exactly an inspiring or exciting thing to work in. So, an opportunity at Spotify came up, and I just loved working at Spotify. I worked in both ad sales, strategy operations, reporting and insights, compliance, and then I was able to move to premium. So to really learn deeply why users subscribe to SaaS platforms, and so I'd like to think that I've got a wide expertise in user monetization, both free and premium. Loved working there, but wanted to find something more. I'm very personally interested in information marketplaces, places where information is traded, bought, sold, exchanged. And so I went to work at an education startup as director of subscriptions, and they're focused on delivering homework help to middle school and high school kids. And that's the first time I'd worked in an information marketplace.
Like a Khan Academy type of a company?
A little bit, yeah, like a Quora, kind of a Quora for high school kids.
Right, Quora, sure.
And that was fantastic. But I was, again, just looking for something more. I'm like a magpie. I think George is too. We kind of, the second we achieve something, we're like, okay, what's next? So it was at that point when George reached out to me about this idea. And, it's not a natural fit to go from where I'm in to, working in executive recruiting. There's a bit of a gap there. But I see it as an information marketplace and as a space that is untouched by platforms. Effectively, it's virgin territory for optimization. And that's something that I'm personally very interested in. So information marketplaces and places where you can improve efficiency. And so we hashed this idea out, and here we are a year and a bit, year and a half later, we're live and running and having a fantastic time.
So you kind of build a lot of the technology and manage a lot of that stuff. And George, you drive the other side of it, bringing people in, getting people engaged, that type of stuff. Is that kind of how you delineate things at this point?
Somewhat.
I
would say, well, there's also a third member of the founding team who's not here. He is our CTO, and he is responsible for all of the build of the platform. He's an absolute code wizard. I don't think in my years of recruiting CTOs, I've encountered someone quite as good as him when it comes to just the number of languages he can code in. It's a little freaky. We were very fortunate to find him. And so the way we essentially split it is, Nick really handles much of the membership ecosystem, the data, the analytics, the user journeys. And I'm just the guy who benefits from their hard work, right?
Exactly. Well, where's he located? Is he located in the States too? The CTO?
Yes. Yeah. He's up in Connecticut right now.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, tell him I'm insulted he wouldn't come on my show. So. Like I'm chopped liver,
I think what I've enjoyed working with George with so much is yes, the assumption is that I know what I'm talking about and I can build these platforms, but it's actually working together in a partnership. It's the knowledge and intelligence and wisdom that George has from doing what he's doing and basically attacking this marketplace. But he's able to pick all this stuff up. So I come from, over a decade of online experience, and I'm like, actually, I'm not that valuable anymore because George knows more, the same, if not more.
Yeah, I'm
than,
sure
than
he doesn't
want
to do your job, Nick. That's the case. He's not that stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nick clearly hasn't recognized my art of bullshit.
Totally.
So, okay. So there's two things I really want to talk about today. One is you guys are entrepreneurs. You've started your own business. You're running the business and how you are building that and connecting with people and what advice you have for people that are starting basically it's a technology platform is what it really is. And also on the executive side, you know, there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure right now, that are rethinking what their life's like working for one particular company. Looking to potentially make a move in a difficult time, but is like, I'm miserable. I don't want to be there. I don't believe in these guys, whatever it is. And you know, short of calling the few recruiters they knew when they got the job, they really have nowhere else to go. So maybe we can talk about both, but I'd like to talk first about, you know, how you guys kind of put the business together and how you've been building the business and the challenges that you've faced. Cause you obviously both have a different kind of view of it, right? You come from, Nick comes more of a technology side. You're coming from the recruiting side. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to hear from each of you guys what you think. Maybe you'll disagree. It'll be make for a good podcast.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get an argument going here. No,
right, there you go.
I doubt that. We just happen to be, we're very good friends in our personal lives. So we've always sort of just been a very similar but different person, which is probably why we work so well together.
Yeah, no, that's...
But I think in my experience, one thing I always bring up when I first thought about this is people romanticize the entrepreneur journey, right? They think it's something that's super easy.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it's like the Social Network movie where you get an idea, you build the platform and boom, you're Facebook. And really what you're doing is you are 14 hours a day in front of a laptop by yourself, right?
Right.
You have co-founders, you are with them, you're in a room. Most of the time you're losing over and over and over again. And it's just about continuing to say, you know what, I'm going to keep going. And so, you know, the best way to phrase it is it's like a war of attrition with yourself. When are you going to quit?
Right.
And I find that, I don't know, maybe it's my life or the way I've got here or what got me here, but I've always been someone who, you know, you can punch me in the stomach 1,000 times, I'm going to keep walking forward. And so that's been a very valuable, at least for me in this journey, because to me, it's just about getting beat up every day and choosing to get back up.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this, it's a highly rewarding experience. And, you know, when Nick and I first started this, we met in coffee shops, you know, and it was sort of sneaking around outside work and sneaking him into the WeWork that I was in so we could work after work hours.
Yeah. You want to keep your jobs. Nobody wants, that's the thing, right? Keep the money coming in. Don't quit.
Absolutely. We kept it as long as we could until, you know, we had to dive into this full time. And it was just amazing where, you know, then we built these, you know, I like to say these awful drawings that I drew of what the product could be or what it could look like. And I know Nick wants to frame them one day and put them on the office wall, but,
yes,
you know, it was,
we
just
will.
And then we had to find a CTO to build it, right? And it's like there are all these challenges. And so, you know, one of the most common challenges you'll find when you look it up online is how do you find a technical co-founder, right? People talk about that all the time. And for us, it was, you know, we didn't feel like spending $150,000 on the dev shop. You know, for some people who have those deep pockets, sure. But for us, we're first-time entrepreneurs. It sort of came to that moment where we were frustrated by it. We didn't know what we were going to do. We almost quit. And I remember we went away on vacation and I was just like, you know what, man, like, what am I doing? Like, I spent how many years as a recruiter? I'm going to find our CTO. Like, I will hunt down and get a CTO. And I sent out hundreds of cold emails, hunting them down on LinkedIn. And it was ultimately, finally, someone answered. And it was a lot of luck, I think, goes into it.
Well, you kind of proved your concept, though, because if there was a platform like the Suite, you would have found the guy.
Exactly. I would have found him.
Right.
But we found the guy who had a great background. We met with him. We took him out for drinks, and that sort of sealed the deal. You know, like a 3:30 finish of we're going to change the world together.
Somebody got that.
And that was it. You know, that really got us to where we built this thing. And then, you know, we ran face first into COVID-19 when we launched post beta the world.
You
stopped.
Said like February, March, you launched, right?
Yeah.
Now, what was the initial concept? What was the basic concept? Like before you found your partner,
yeah,
the guy, what was the initial concept on the back of a napkin?
Absolutely. So the initial concept was essentially a private job board that only executives could access, removing the 10,000 applications you get from a LinkedIn or another public site, which is companies' number one reasons why they don't use job boards for executive jobs.
Right.
So that's what we started with. And so you can imagine that for a company that's entire business is job listings.
Right.
COVID-19 was our Armageddon.
Well, obviously, who the hell's going to get a job?
Yeah.
Although I heard stories, but they weren't until like June or July of people getting placed or anything like that.
Exactly. And so, you know, March came and Nick and I were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And so, you know, Nick came up with this fantastic idea of, you know, this suite of products. And we started building. I mean, I mean, Nick, you know, tell us about the product.
Yeah, you can go into that. I'd like to hear about that.
It's like one of the fundamentals of conversion funnels and is retaining users through a wide variety of you know, broad depth of engagement. And so that's what my experience with the companies I've worked at, that's successful companies that build, or successful subscription companies all build a wide set of products so that your need is met every time you come in because needs fluctuate over time. So, you know,
more reason for you to stay than to leave, right?
So you exactly. come for something.
Let's pretend like I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So, because I don't.
So you come, you know, we get you into the funnel for one thing and we get you to stay with the three other things you didn't even know existed. So it's a standard practice. And we looked at, you know, we were both speaking with our members and also talking with George about, you know, what companies like where he used to work, what they offer, other products. And we're like, well, we can build this stuff. If you know, executives are constantly looking for compensation data. Well, we have that compensation data. We can build a way to access that compensation data. They're looking for...
Meaning like what somebody at their level is making in other parts of the industry, that type of thing. Are they overcompensating, undercompensating?
Exactly. Okay. And I think one of the journeys that we'd love to see being built is someone who comes from the public sphere wanting to go to a private enterprise. They have no idea what options are. They have no idea what equity they should get. They have no idea if these companies give bonuses. And we can provide that. So we are giving people the ability to... You know, we're getting rid of the information asymmetry that executive recruiters live off. Right. You know, like any kind of private group, accountants, lawyers, they all create information asymmetry. And so we're trying to take that apart. And what we've seen since we've launched these new features is people come for one thing, stay for other things, and then they talk about the features they didn't know about with their friends and bring them in. And so it's a direction that I'm really happy we went down, and it's been very successful for member growth and activation and retention.
So how are you, what's the funnel look like? How are you drawing them in?
Yeah, it's, you know, about 25% of our members come through from referrals. So that's something that we're really proud of because
other members,
members referring other members. And that is, you know, if we're talking about what online platforms go for, it is basically a product market fit.
Right.
So how well does this product fit into your needs as a person, as a human? And a high referral rate should show that. So a lot of our members come in from that. A lot of our members come in from our content machine. You know, we push out articles. We try to be market leaders in this field. And you know, those two things are really how we bring people in. And then once they're in, we give them a very novel experience. The questions we ask are don't really exist anywhere else because executives are very special people. They, you know, you can't ask a LinkedIn style question for someone who's a CXO because, you know, their years of experience, companies they've worked at, these things are not as important anymore.
Right.
So we ask, you know, what have you got experience in mergers and acquisition? Have you taken a company public? Do you have board experience? And then most importantly, we ask you, what is your executive summary, which is your elevator pitch?
Right.
And then what's your purpose statement, which is what impact do you want to have at your next job, at your next role, at your next career? And that's something that's very important to us. You know, careers at this level need to have purpose to have stickiness and retention to make you feel like...
Yeah, because it gets to a point where it's not just about money.
Money is going to be great. What makes you stay is I think I'm having an impact.
Right.
And then we onboard every member. We give the offer to onboard every member. So we're very customer centric, which is super important.
How many members do you guys have right now?
Yeah, we are just about to pass 700 members.
Oh, okay. All paying?
We have a variety. So it's a freemium model. So we have a variety of paying customers. The majority of our members are free. That's something that was very important to us. As the beauty of a two-sided marketplace is the other side of the business is, you know, the enterprise side is where the majority of our focus is on monetization.
On the employer side.
Yeah. We want it to be a little different. We want it to be a little different. There's a lot of services out there that charge you $400 a month to just be on the platform. And our viewpoint is that you've already achieved that in your life, in your career. You shouldn't have to pay to accelerate that. And that's something that we believe in. We've believed in it from day one, and we're going to believe in that as long as we can, because it's very important to us.
Yeah. So what kind of, as business owners, what kind of challenges have you guys faced in as entrepreneurs? I mean, you were starting to talk about it before, George, but like, Nick, what do you think has been the hardest part about this whole thing as being a business owner?
It's George sort of said it perfectly. You're constantly battling against yourself. And you know, it's that feeling of imposter syndrome. I would expect that most business owners who are running early businesses, whether they're entrepreneurs or physical, you know, brick and mortar or whatever, they feel like, am I doing the right thing? Right. And you're constantly looking for that validation. And I think that my biggest bit of advice that I tell everyone I talk to about building a business is have a partner, have someone who will give you, you know, feedback, both positive and critical on your ideas, but will also be there for you if you need a little bit of support. Like if you're especially feeling bad because something isn't working, it was a big bet, you know, talking to your co-founder is a huge benefit.
Right.
But I would caveat that partners should be equal and opposite to you. George and I are very opposite personalities. If we were both me, then we would achieve nothing. So right. We have heated discussions a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very productive because, number one, we know how to stop them if they get personal. And number two, you need counterpoints. You need someone who's going to say, Nick, that's a terrible idea for these five reasons. And then you move on, you create something from that. So those are like my two things of advice. I would find a partner and find a partner who is equal yet opposite in your outlook on life.
Yeah, I talk a lot about that. Like if you are a solopreneur and it's a small business, get an advisor. It doesn't have to be a coach. It could be somebody you mentor with, somebody you trust.
Absolutely.
Somebody who will be honest with you and say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, why would you even do that? Now, and sometimes you educate them and they're like, oh, there's something there. But I mean, it's definitely true when you're just getting started, especially if you're in your job, right? So you're in your job, you're trying to build this platform. It's a hobby to start, right? You don't know if it's going to become a business. And not a lot of people get to the point where they leap, you know, and sometimes I guess you got to the point where you had to, right? I mean,
Yeah.
We it's one of those things we could have stretched it forever. Right. And I think a lot of people do that. And I've talked to people and, you know, Mitch, they, it's been years since they've had their idea and they still haven't left. And, you know, I remember I was talking about this with Nick and it was sort of like, we used to go back and forth. Like, when do we want to leave? What do we want to do? Like, let's do this. And realize it was all of this arbitrary just belief of when is the right time. And ultimately it came down to, you know, there's that old saying, if you want to take the island first, you have to burn your boats. And I knew until we made the choice to dive in full time,
right,
it would never actually take off. And so we did it. And I dove in full time in November of almost a year ago now. And I told Nick, and I remember, you know, we're very competitive with each other. And so, you know, Nick immediately said, oh man, you beat me to it. And he went in the next day and handed in his resignation.
Why are you quitting? Because so George quit before me. I gotta go.
True.
Now, is the business at this point cash flowing? I mean, you guys take a salary from the business, or you really can't do that yet?
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's LAW to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
No, we're still not doing that. And to be honest, you know, even if we could, I don't think we would. I think we have really big goals for this business. We have a vision for this business. And so everything we make, we reinvest into.
Yeah, business. Right. That's different. I mean, people say, well, we're not turning profits because we're reinvesting. Well, you are turning profits. You're just not taking those profits home.
Exactly.
Putting them back as capital.
Exactly. We finally reached the point where we no longer have to pour money into the business, which is a big weight off our shoulders.
Right.
Exactly.
Now your CTO, is he an equity shareholder too? So he doesn't get a salary either?
He is an equity shareholder. Yes.
He came on board for equity.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So enlighten me, since I know nothing, well, I know nothing, but I know very little about the recruiting space, except when, you know, I've dealt with executive recruiters. I get people call me all the time from law firm recruiters, you know, they're looking for, none of it makes any sense to me, but tell me about the platform. Like what if I'm a user, what kind of services what kind of services benefit me that is part of the suite?
Yeah,
we did say that, right? It's called the suite. We said that, didn't we?
Yes, yeah. The suite. Yes,
it'll be in the show notes too. But I don't remember.
Yeah, it's like, where are those guys?
It's like, what was that program? I don't remember.
Yeah. We just thesuite.com, right? As possible. Thesuite.io.
Okay. Well, yeah, what's thesuite.com? Is that someone else?
Someone. We don't talk about it, man.
Oh, somebody just sitting on the domain. There's no. There's no website.
Yeah, we'll come for them after we raise.
Exactly. I think .com is like less of an issue these days.
I agree.
Yeah.
When we decided that, and it shows a novel system or novel platform trying to solve an old problem. That's really the approach if we want to talk from a purely branding point of view.
Yeah, I think IOs tend to be heavy technology platforms. That's what I've seen. Yeah. So
yep.
Yeah. Okay. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think. I'll get to the point to talk about the platform, but I think first it's very important to understand the world of executive recruiting in general. So if I can spend a little bit of time on that.
Sure.
You know, as you said, everyone's familiar with recruiters, right? You get the call, there's the opportunity waiting. It's also important to understand there are two types of recruiters, right? There are contingent recruiters and there are retained recruiters. And so I spent my career on the retained side, which is where you run into the Heidrick & Struggles, the Spencer Stewarts, the big behemoth public companies. They do retainer-based services, very similar to any attorney or law firm.
So they don't get a commission on the placement of the person?
So they do. So they get a retainer where they collect the fee up front. The final portion of the fee is usually contingent upon the hire. So what they do is they break up the fee into three parts. They do first part on sign off, second part on the shortlist, and the third part on the hire. But as a company, to hire a retained search firm, you're on the hook for at least 66% of that fee.
Right.
You look at the numbers behind an executive search process, you know, executive search firms, they love to make you think that they have access to everyone in the world, which is not true. And so you go through a search, and let's say your market for an executive search which is highly niche, is, let's say it's 100 people. Right. Okay. And that's being very generous of a market size. And so of that 100 people, the firm you hired works with three of your biggest competitors, which instantly knocks out 40 to 50 people out of that list because they can't touch them with nine.
Right. Of course. Right.
So now your list is half the size. So then you have the 40 or 50 people who are left. What happens next? They call them. They talk to them. Maybe they catch them on a bad day. Maybe they don't want to relocate. And so you get all of these rejection reasons that makes this list trickle down to the point where you probably only have about 10 to 12 people that the search firm actually interviews in a process. And so after you get through those 12 people, then they deliver a short list of 4 to 6.
Right.
So you have to, you're under the assumption that out of 100 people in the market, 4 to 6 are the perfect people. They are the best in the market on the opinion of a search firm who doesn't work for your business. And so you sort of have to ask yourself, for $150,000 for 5 people, you know, you hope those are the best people in the market because you paid $30,000 per interview.
Well, they're probably not. You already know that 40 to 50% of them are knocked out because of their relationships with other companies. You didn't even get a chance to talk to those.
Exactly.
Exactly. But the problem is no one talks about this. Obviously, recruiters don't talk about it.
No, well, companies don't want to. Yeah. The recruiting company doesn't want to knock out, you know, what they can do.
Of course. And so, you know, for us, and sort of tying this back to your question, Mitch, is, you know, for us, it was all about fixing that problem, right? And the way to fix that is to not put a middle person, remove the middle person and let the person connect with the company. Let companies connect directly with the candidates looking for these jobs. And so by doing that, we open up the marketplace and we allow the company to sit in the driver's seat of their own search. And so if you look at it from the perspective of a company, you create your account, you list the job, and that day you're going to start getting applications, right? Executives in our network are going to see your job and they're going to be able to apply to it or refer someone from their network to that job. And so we're not only limited to the size of our network, we're limited to the size of the network of our network. Right. And it's all about creating this network effect and of reach. Right.
Well, you have to, because normally executive recruiting or headhunting, you're looking for people that aren't on the market.
Exactly.
Exactly. 100%. And so, you know, these people, they're not on LinkedIn. You know, they don't answer LinkedIn. They get harassed on LinkedIn, so they don't use it. And so, you know, we are opening up that market and we are giving companies access to that higher level of talent. But in doing so, we're also protecting that talent because everything we've built was for the job seeker, right? We didn't build this for companies. Mm-hmm. We built it to protect the job seekers through the process and to give job seekers the tools and support they needed to not only advance their careers, but to grow their networks, because networking is a very important part of career growth.
So that's a big part of, if you're not in the marketplace for a job, you can go on the suite to meet other executives and to network with other
people
in other industries. Yeah,
exactly. So we have a feature built around networking. It's called Rolodex. And so Rolodex is essentially a networking CRM. And what I mean by that is, you know, we took the traditional contact list that you have on an online platform and we redesigned it from the ground up.
Right.
And we built in a layers of customization to allow you to essentially curate your network and to organize it based on your needs. And so that's something that, again, is goes back to that original pillar of it's all about simplicity of the career management process.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people listening don't know what the word Rolodex means. So
we're wondering people. That. I think surprisingly, it's not. I was expecting the same thing, too. But when we talk about it with especially our more junior members of the platform, everyone still gets it.
They do.
I think it's a fantastic name because that's
probably
exactly
trademarked, you know. I don't know if the company's still in business.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, who knows? We did check it with our attorney, so we did get the pass on it.
Yeah, that's good. Good.
Yeah. But as long as we don't start selling paper that rotates, I think we're okay.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, yeah, I don't know. Is Rolodex still in business? Can you get a Rolodex? Maybe it's electronic version now.
Maybe on eBay.
Yeah. I knew these guys, they were big. There was a CPA firm. They later merged, you know, they all merged, but these guys were marketing like nutcases. I mean, and this one guy had like 4 of these enormous wheels, Rolodex wheels on his, to the side of his desk. I mean, there must've been a couple thousand cards in each wheel.
Wow.
And
that's crazy.
I don't know how you mine that data, but he had it, you know. He felt good about it. He's like, look, I got all these. I'm like, what are you going to do with them? I don't know. Because you remember, it's all alphabetical. But if you have 4 of them, I don't know if it was all alphabetical. So you could go flip through it and figure out your stuff. That was the first CRM database.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think about
it.
That was better than just having cards in a drawer, I guess.
You know? But what's amazing is, you know, we seem to have moved away from that level of customization and organization. You know, if you look at today, if you look at any network, right? So Facebook, LinkedIn, AngelList, anything that has the capabilities to connect with people, you get a list, a contact list filled with everyone you've ever connected with. And quickly you have 5,000 connections and no way to organize it. And you're looking at this list and you're like, how am I supposed to find Bob in a list of 5,000 people? I don't remember what company Bob works at. And so it's this challenge of, it's just funny that we started out at the hyper-organized spectrum of a Rolodex, right? Customized alphabetically or however else you want to do it. And we moved away with technology. We've gone away from the organization aspect and we've just gone for, I guess, simplicity or ease of use. I don't know.
Well, I think because of the search features, you could just throw everybody in a box, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I get LinkedIn requests all the time. If I don't know who they are, if I'm like, who are they connected with? Are they connected with you guys? All right. But I get connections. They say, we're connected with, like you said, Bob. And I'm thinking, I don't even know who Bob is. Like, I have no idea. So I don't usually accept those.
My favorite is when you get that message of, we have a couple mutual contacts. I think that
would be sad. It's got to be a kid. But then you look at them, you don't even recognize the contacts.
Yeah. And I think what it is there's a lot of talk right now about verticalized marketplaces. You know, that is the next iteration of where platforms are going. It's towards verticalized marketplaces. So something that solves the needs of a very specific tranche of users with lots of different products. And you're seeing that in the recruiting space a lot. And I think the advantage with that is if you share commonality with the community, both in terms of background and purpose, then you're more likely to connect. So you don't accept that LinkedIn request because you have nothing in common with that person apart from you were both hassled by one contact who connects you to.
Unless they give me a note and explain to me like why. I was talking to Nick the other day and he said, we would be great. We should meet. I'll be like, okay.
Exactly. So what we're trying to do is there's a commonality with our marketplace. All of our members have achieved something in their career. They've achieved, VP or senior, and they all believe in purpose, like career purpose, having impact and trying something different. And so when you get a request from one of our members, you're more likely to take it because you share that common background. So that was something very important.
So that is a way that you do connect with each other on the platform.
Yeah. And,
okay.
And a lot of people were sort of saying when we were first coming up with this idea, it's like, well, why are you focusing on executives? Why not focus on a specific slice of the executive marketplace? Be the executive marketplace for hospitality, whatever. It's because we don't want to limit ourselves to sort of that industrial background, because there's a commonality between all executives, regardless of the industry they work in. They all share very similar things. And we can actually build a much tighter, stronger network because they have that executive background, not because they both work in hospitality.
Right.
Because a lot of people actually, they don't want to stay in hospitality. They want to move from X to Y.
Right. They're looking to make a jump to another industry. But you could also do like subgroups within the platform where people can join the hospitality group. Or maybe they're looking to get into healthcare. So they're like, I want to join the healthcare group and introduce myself. And
100%. You know, when we onboard every member, most of them say, I don't want to do the thing I've been doing for X years. I want to take my function and I want to do it somewhere else. And it's like, okay, well, we can help you find the roles, connect you with our concierge team, our coach, our career coach experts, and our kind of journey experts. And we can also connect you with other executives that have done that path and you can learn from them. So we like to offer three different outlets for you to achieve your career goals, whether it's roles, coaching team, or other executives within our network.
Now, if we did not have a pandemic going on, would you guys be doing like regional events at this point, or you know, in-person stuff?
Yeah, definitely. We had originally planned, I think Nick and I both agree. I don't know if it would be conferences or the mass events you see. I think that's very popular. Some people, I think what we always favored, especially with our network, was more intimate dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Very tight niche mastermind groups of 8 to 12 executives with a particular problem in mind or a particular background. That was what we wanted to do. We have full plans to do that once the world returns to normal. Not really interested in doing it online, you know, potentially, but I feel that it's an experience that we want to do right. And so we're waiting till the world returns a little more to normal.
I mean, one of the advantages of online, and I think you probably should include that going forward, is that you can get people around the country that can connect where they can't locally. If they're in, you know, Washington State, they may have a dinner in Seattle, but if they want to connect and they're willing to relocate, you know, connect
That's
around.
It.
So it's probably both at some point, you know. Are your members spread throughout the country pretty evenly? Or are they concentrated in certain areas? Or
Yeah, I would say if you were to look at a heat map, you'd see definitely a focus on major cities, metropolitan areas, really. But that's just a product of where companies happen to be located.
Right, of course.
But we have members across, 32, 33 states already?
Yeah, pretty much the majority. Yeah, it's something that as you go away from the cities, the sort of the funnel gets a little bit more complex. You know, how do you acquire members who are on sites and, you know, that you aren't on? And that's really, as we start to scale the company, that's really what we want to start doing, is connecting people who are, say, not based in one of the major cities,
right,
to a young company that's looking for someone who's got that exact expertise, is again another story that we want to develop. You know, if we have a young startup that wants to speak to an expert in something quite niche, how do you find that person? And that's the kind of story we want to develop. They're looking for advisors in this background and experience. Well, we have that person for you.
Right.
So, you know, we're looking to scale that growth and not just focus on the cities. I think a lot of, you know, the competition out there focuses on the cities and focuses on just, you know, one type of person, one vertical. We want to be as open as possible.
Yeah, well, that's the traditional way. I mean, in the virtual world, yep, things are different now. There's going to be people looking for talent all over the place.
Exactly.
100%.
That's why I asked if your CTO was in the United States. It doesn't have to be. Keep working from Australia. I mean, you got to deal with time differences, but beyond that, you can work together. You know,
That's about it.
Absolutely. You know, and especially with this new work from home is most likely permanent for a lot of businesses. And, you know, originally Nick and I had this fantasy of the office life and living at the office.
It'll look like WeWorks, right? This beautiful space, all these huddle rooms, and everybody's going to be exposed. And now we all get coronavirus. So you can't do that anymore.
Exactly.
Crazy. Yeah. Wow. I have a guy I just interviewed who runs a company, a training coaching company in Texas, and they decided to go virtual. So he and his wife moving to Denver. They always wanted to live there.
That's it.
They don't need to be in Austin anymore.
That's it.
Yeah. Definitely tempting.
Yeah.
I think the flexible, you know, I don't think the future of work will be all home or all at work. I think it's going to be flexibility, which, you know, we're very excited about, because there's so much intelligence that is basically looking for, like when I say intelligence, I mean people that are looking for flexibility. They might have retired, or they might be on the verge of retiring, or they, you know, they might be having to take less hours because of a family and kids. And you know, we can offer those people opportunities to connect with companies that are looking for exactly that.
Yeah.
So we're very excited. You know, it's very sad it had to come through a like deadly pandemic, but we're very excited that shift is slowly happening. And we embrace flexible work as much as possible, both in our company and with our members.
I think you're going to see the next generation of millennials and whatever not expecting to go to work every day. I mean,
100%.
I don't think there's anybody that said, I want to work from home 100%. And nobody said, I want to work, go back to work 100%. So you make yourself crazy if you never get out of the house. But right now, nobody wants to go on the train anyway. And
totally,
you know, it's funny because I think we're working. I think work has become a bigger part of our life now.
Yeah, totally agree.
You don't have that downtime of traveling home and kind of decompressing.
Yep.
Or getting geared up on your way to work, you know, walking to the train quietly.
It's like a mode switch that doesn't happen anymore.
Correct.
There's no switch. There's no separation. You know, your office is your bedroom or your living room.
In 10 minutes, you can be up, washed up, and on a Zoom call. Yeah.
That's it. And really, the only challenge is finding a space where your neighbor, your colleague at work isn't your you know, wife, husband, partner who's totally sick of dealing with you because you can't have those water cooler moments anymore.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, I have a co-working space here because I don't really have an office at home. I could reconfigure some things, but I haven't decided not to do it. It's 6 minutes from my house. So people could do that. You know, they go to the city 2 days a week and then the co-working space 3 days a week and, you know, you're fine. Yeah. I mean, kind of trapped in this room, but, you know. Yeah, I got to put on my mask to leave.
That is frustrating.
Yeah.
But I think George and I have spoken a lot about this. You know, it's that modality. You're changing from home to work modality, and it's really the commute. So maybe I should just like walk around the block before my 9 a.m.
It's probably not a bad idea. I mean, if you think about it, what did we gain back a couple of hours a day?
Yeah.
Because of travel. Yeah, some people had more than that, you know?
That is very true.
That's huge, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I used to have these 8 o'clock meetings, I would have to get up, leave my house before 7 and Now you just zoom in. It's like, you know, what are we getting to? I don't think I'll ever do another networking meeting in person. Why? What do I got to drive 40 minutes to have a cup of coffee with somebody?
I agree.
You have each of your days. Yeah.
It's crazy. I agree.
Yeah. This is not, I mean, so clients, I understand. I'm looking at a company right now with a bunch of guys to maybe take over and run the company. Guys older, ones that we had to go there. We had to see the company.
Yeah, of course.
It's a distribution warehouse, you know, and they had all kinds of protocols and whatever. But, you know, we were like, how are we going to do this? And, oh, no, they want you to come in. They had to wear a mask the whole time, you know, whatever.
I know it sounds weird to say it. I miss business travel. You know, I miss like, you know, getting on a plane, you know, and I miss like meet up with your colleagues. And I think the one thing that we have noticed is creativity. So when we're together in one room, all of us together, when we're meeting with our you know, we have a huge network of people that are helping us come up with ideas and review ideas. Just being around like a whiteboard is so great for creativity. So I know that's one thing that George and I we're trying to deal with. And we are much better, much more creative people when we're together in the same place. So I think we'll probably adopt a hub mentality. You know, we have to meet every so often so that we have like the bind between the employees and the team, but also those creative moments and also times to just blow off steam and go out for dinner and enjoy working together. That's the things I'm most worried about and miss the most in this kind of new working environment.
So where do you guys see things going, like with the pandemic and executives in certain industries? Do you guys see any trends or company, you know, industries that are hiring more, industries that are hiring less?
Absolutely. So I think just to answer your immediate question, I mean, in terms of hiring more, healthcare is booming right now. Okay. Pharma, biotech, for obvious reasons, it's a rat race right now.
Right.
E-commerce is buzzing. The traditional businesses are sort of dying, right? The brick and mortar stores, the restaurant and hospitality groups that are suffering.
Right.
Hiring is just on a halt, and that's probably not going to stop. But you know, the other thing that I've talked about quite a bit with people is, you know, people talk about the great rehiring is coming and all this, and you know, I think people don't understand is that a lot of the hiring trends that happened early in the pandemic did not affect the executive level, right? There was no impact at the executive. Companies weren't shedding executives. They were shedding workforce. And so you've had this mass reduction in executive churn, right? The rate in which employees leave companies.
Right.
And so what happens is executives are not getting let go or not being downsized out. And so they're also not leaving their job because they're terrified of the job market. And so they're sort of just saying, you know what, I'll stick around until 2021.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And so, you know, what's going to happen and what companies are going to find is that executives who are unhappy, eventually they're going to say, you know what, this isn't changing and I need a new job. So I don't care.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in our opinion, I mean, there's going to be a massive correction in the executive space.
Totally.
So, you know, that's why our big focus has been growing membership as big as possible. Because when that moment does happen, when companies do find themselves where all of a sudden they've lost their CTO, you know, we are in a unique position to be able to service that quickly and efficiently. And so that's sort of the big bet that we're banking on, because no one's really paying attention to this market.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it depends on what the flow is, right? If there's more going out than coming in.
I think the other exciting thing that's happening right now is this pandemic moment is making companies address their future, their long-term future, especially established companies. So we're seeing a lot of companies needing to diversify their talent pool to build products that appeal to the changing audiences, but also that appeal to the change in just how humans want to interact with the goods and services. So, you know, we're seeing financial institutions that are looking to have more fintech experience because they need to diversify their portfolio. So, you know, that's another journey that we're very excited about assisting. And you know, we're seeing that happen a lot. So those are two big trends that we're tracking, and we're excited to be supporting that opportunity for both companies and our members.
Yeah. So maybe when companies are branding themselves for their customers, they have to start branding themselves for their employees to attract the kind of people that want to go, right? That want to go into their environment, that are looking for, you know, if I'm an executive and I have a lot of experience and I don't necessarily need the largest, you know, compensation package, I may look for something that says, "Yeah, you can work from home 3 days a week, and we'll equip your house, and you know,
yeah,
exactly
type of stuff. So yeah,
absolutely. The nap pods and the ping pong tables and the kombucha on tap has morphed into work from home flexibility.
Right.
That is the latest buzzword. And
nobody wants to
like
share kombucha and a ping pong table anymore.
The reality is like, I'd rather not have, you know, to have to try and find daycare when I can be at home or my partner can be at home, and
right.
and the trade-off of like one less kombucha glass on tap versus actually not having to find daycare or someone to take care of my kids. That's a huge advantage for, I don't want to go as big as that, but for a society. So it's a really exciting time to be involved in this space.
You know, it's weird because I'm getting a little bit off the topic, but from an economic standpoint, it's good and it's bad, right? If you're in the economy that services all those people through daycare and dry cleaning and all that stuff, you're going to have problems. I mean, I go to my dry cleaning, place is half empty. Nobody's
a really good
I don't wear suits anymore. I wear these pants more than once. You know, what am I doing? So we're bringing some shirts. So my dry cleaning bills definitely dropped in half.
Yeah.
And during the height of it, it was nothing. I mean, I wasn't wearing, it was springtime. I'm wearing polo shirts. I don't take those to the dry cleaner. So yeah.
That's a great
point. And then there's, so we save even gas, right? So the gas companies are making less money. I have a client who's in the automotive, you know, body shop stuff, types of people driving less. So there's less accidents.
Mm-hmm. Less accidents.
Yeah, it's true. What happens.
It's definitely, it's a Kodak moment of, you know, everyone's digitizing, but we're going to stay on the film point of view. So it's these companies need to diversify
because there is a correction. Look what happened to Kodak.
Look what happened. Now there was a point when they were going to be doing cryptocurrency mining, and then they're going to be
something weird. Are they still in business? But not in the film business.
Yeah, then I think they were doing something. They were supposed to be building ventilators for the government. I don't know what they're doing.
And Polaroid? What the hell? Yeah, I think you could still get like a little Polaroid the kids play around with them or something.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
They're like the size of a basketball.
Exactly.
I actually bought a Polaroid camera. We bought one off eBay, old one, and they still take cool photos.
Can you still get the film?
You could still get the film, but there's only a couple places like B&W in Manhattan can provide the film. It's refrigerated, all that stuff. It just has that effect that you can't replicate with an Instagram filter. It's just so cool.
There'll be that, but that's not a huge business. So it's weird to see the shift, but I guess you also see executives that'll shift to industries that are, you know, e-commerce, warehousing, logistics.
That's it.
100%. You know, there's a strong desire for people to change industries, and yet there's so little information out there to help people change industries, and people don't know how to do it. Right. So some people they're completely unaware that they can change industries. They're like, I've been in banking for 25 years. What else am I going to do? No one else is going to hire me. And they're dead wrong.
Yeah.
And there is such a massive demand for people from other industries. And, you know, back in my recruiting days, we used to do this all the time. I mean, we would take people from banking and we would put them into telco companies or put them into retail. Right. And you look at the reasons why, and it's because on paper, they sound very different. But when you think about it, just at the very basic level, a retail bank and a retail store, there are massive distribution networks of products and customer foot traffic to account for, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like the skill sets, depending on your function,
right?
There's a lot of overlay there. And so it's about educating people. And I would say the majority of our experts, when they're talking to members about career help, is about teaching them that you can change industries. This is how you do it. This is how you phrase your story to translate over. And now with COVID and this realization that some industries are dying or are decimated to who knows when they're going to recover. It's very important to get that information out there that people are aware, because if you have been impacted and you have been laid off, you need a plan. You need help, right? You need people looking out for you to get out of this, because that's the only way it's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe I'm wrong. I would think before you made that comment that like, if you want to switch into healthcare, it'd be hard. They'd be looking for people with healthcare background. Healthcare is a technical business. There's a lot of regulation.
Yeah. I mean, again, it depends on your function.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you are, you know, if you are a general counsel and you know, it becomes very difficult, right?
Yeah,
because there are so many nuances to the law.
Right.
Exactly. But if you are a CTO whose specialty is infrastructure transformation, it doesn't matter if your company sells teddy bears or alcohol and tobacco. The technology is the technology that keeps these machines running.
Right.
And so those skill sets become very transferable. On the super nuanced ones, I mean, yeah, 100%. It's very hard to reinvent yourself if you've spent your entire career as a patent attorney. And all of a sudden you want to shift into,
because you don't have
marital
the experience.
Law.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
A lot of the general counsel positions are very specialized. They need a privacy attorney. They need a employment attorney, healthcare, a lot of this stuff. Because if it's just general, you'd probably keep them out of house.
Exactly.
Not pay the money. Exactly. Right. Cross-border stuff. It's crazy stuff sometimes. But all right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your thoughts. We'll put links in the show notes to thesuite.io.
Awesome.
People want to interact with you, right? They can find you on LinkedIn. And actually, that's how we were connected, through Sandy on LinkedIn.
That's it. Yeah. They can follow us on LinkedIn. They can check out our Twitter, which is a growing audience. We're just getting started on a lot of the social aspects. So bear with us. Anyone who wants to follow us. Then they can stay up to date on everything that we're doing.
All right, guys, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Mitch, thanks for having us, man. This has been great.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Awesome.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.